am Rebecca Cohen.
And I'm Maya Grant.
And this is The Sauce, the culture and politics podcast where we drink cocktails and ruin the stuff you love.
We're just going to do a quick rundown of this past week of responses to COVID-19.
This past couple weeks, looking at how some in the public sphere, particularly politicians, have reacted. We think there's some interesting stuff to talk about.
It's a really interesting performance of how people manage in a fucking crisis.
All right, so we're going to talk about leadership in this terrible crisis, the good, the bad, and the orange. Aren't I clever? But before we do, we have to check in with each other and share what's been going on as we lose our minds in this quarantine situation. Maya, how are you? What are you drinking?
So I am drinking Fortaleza tequila with, I don't have limes, so I only have lemons, which are not limes. It's not just that they really are a different fruit.
I don't think anyone argued otherwise.
Yeah, so I'm dealing with that difference by adding a little bit of ginger beer to it. Mm. And it's quite a tasty cocktail. It is so my quarantini.
Tequila with lime and ginger beer. Mm-hmm. But lemon.
Lemon and ginger beer.
So not quite a mule.
Yeah, not quite a mule. Close to, not quite.
I bet it has a name already. We just have to look
it up. It's possible. It's possible.
Yeah.
And what are you drinking?
I am drinking kind of a variation on the cactus juice. I have tequila also with amaretto and an ice cube of lemon juice, which was something you suggested to me some time ago when I had too many lemons and didn't know what to do with them. You said juice them and freeze it, and then sometime in the future you'll have fresh lemon juice and, you know, you can drop the ice cubes and drink. So I put one in here. I topped it off with club soda and a little bit of habanero shrub.
Ooh. Yeah,
it's very nice. I really like
it. Is this homemade habanero shrub?
Oh, goodness, no. I'm not even sure what shrub is.
Yeah, it's a kind of like old-timey way of making refreshing drinks.
I know. It's like a drink flavoring. I know that. Like, I don't know what it's made of or anything like that. If anyone does make their own shrub, I'm very impressed. But no, mine's from the store. And I'm doing good. I really actually kind of like this whole quarantine situation.
Yeah.
It's kind of my dream in life in a lot of ways. Not the part about people getting sick and dying and the medical system being overwhelmed and all that shit. That stuff sucks. But me getting to stay at home in my pajamas all day is pretty rad.
Yeah, I mean, being an artist is essentially a form of extreme social distancing.
Right.
And if I didn't have children, I think I'd be enjoying. I mean, that's what I was doing on my residency, was essentially extreme social distancing in a very nice big studio.
In a way, that's what an artist residency is.
That's it.
Just time to do your arts. And your farts, because no one's around.
Exactly.
To disturb you. Get in your way.
Exactly.
I like it. I do feel like a weight off my shoulders in weird ways. Like, I have all these clothes that I need to get altered, or like, oh, I need to make an appointment for the dentist. There's these sort of things I've been needing to do, and now it's like, well, I can't do them. I can't do any of that.
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
Right.
It's not my fault.
Exactly.
So I like that. But a lot of people are getting like cabin fever and starting to feel it pretty strongly. I want to know, because I know you are at home with two young children and they take a lot of time and effort. How is that working out, Maya?
You know, it comes out in interesting ways. Like, I have this thing where I don't bake. I'm not a very good baker. In fact, I'm a failure as a baker. I'm a great cook because cooking is loose. Cooking isn't precise. You know, you throw a little bit in. Oh, I put too much of this. Let's just put a little bit of that. Baking requires a kind of precision that I do not have. I think we discussed this with the Great British Bake Off.
Yes.
And I just fuck up the most basic recipes that people are like, this is a fuck up proof recipe. I still fuck it up. And suddenly I got so enraged, somehow like enraged. And I was like, I'm going to fucking bake and it's going to work. And I like made turkey burgers and I was like, I'm going to make the buns myself and we are going to do it and I'm going to do it. And I did it.
And they turned out good.
They did. They were quite tasty. It could have been better, but at least it didn't totally fail. Like, I was like, I'm going to make cookies, motherfucker. Like, the rage was the interesting part, not the will. Yeah. I mean, I always take up new things, but like the rage that it triggered in me, I think is very related to this moment in time. Also, and we'll get to this later, I know that like my rage at Senator Richard Burr is just multiplied and amplified by the fact that it's like my favorite Kids in the Hall sketch. Who's to blame? Like, I just feel so much rage at him. So, there's just a lot of rage. My kids are, for the most part, managing. The little one is actually doing better than the big kid, although the little one finally had a meltdown. And I could only calm her by suggesting that she dress up in a costume and go on a walk. So she got dressed up as a princess. And then we took a walk around the neighborhood and we walked to the fancy part of my neighborhood. And she decided which house was going to be her castle. She went castle shopping, which was quite charming.
That's adorable.
It's did fucking you
talk,
adorable.
Did you talk to her about the responsibilities of leadership in her position as a monarch?
No, but I did tell her that castles are a lot more work to clean than regular houses. They require a lot more work for the upkeep.
I think if you're in like the castle tier of people, you have help.
Well, but I'm saying like we cannot currently afford help. So I'm just saying.
You also cannot afford the castle.
That is also true.
They go together.
And then it's my son is whatever.
Tell us briefly, without saying anything that will embarrass him if he happens to be listening. What's his deal? What's given him such a hard time?
I think that kids need to be with their friends. I think kids need kids. I think that like being stuck with us all day fucking sucks. And I think this year he has a really special teacher. She's like a teacher's teacher. Like we finally got the good teacher. You know what I mean? Like every grade has like the good teacher. We super got the good teacher and he loves it. And in our meeting that we had a couple of weeks ago, she's like, he's on fire for learning. Clearly things are really great for him at school right now. So to be stuck with us all day. So today actually was better. Like we created a schedule and then it's less of a battle of wills. And it's more that like, this is what we do from 1 to 1:30. Like
that's good.
He needed that. Right. So we're going to do a schedule every day. And from 1 to 3, because actually his teacher checks in with him via Zoom every day. I have to say the preschooler Zoom meeting is hilarious.
Oh my God. The preschoolers are having Zoom meetings?
I'm telling you.
This is like a sketch setup. This is ridiculous.
Hilarious. But he meets with his teacher in his class every morning. And then we decided starting today from 1 to 3, we divided up into 4 half-hour chunks. And I lead one and my husband leads one and he gets to choose one and so on. And so today I led math and my husband taught him elementary economics, and they discuss supply and demand. I like was in my studio working, and all of a sudden I hear it. It's excellent.
Very important fundamental lessons for a third grader, fourth grader.
Yeah, third grader.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm glad to hear your buns turned out really well. That sounds hard. Did you put yeast in them?
Yes.
Yeah, see, I've never baked with yeast. I bake, but I bake things that you really can't fuck up. Like, it's not hard to trick people into thinking you can bake.
And I'm telling you, those things that you have not fucked up, I have fucked them up. That's what I'm trying to explain to you.
You've broken through the wall, Maya. You have pierced the veil. You are through to the other side. You're a baker now. What's your next project?
I'm going to make challah. Making challah. That's right. This Friday.
I want to try your challah. You have to send me some. Okay. All right. In a moment, we're going to talk about the Republican and Democratic responses to this whole coronavirus situation. Before we do, we have a couple little things to take care of.
Mm.
We have a new exciting feature. I don't know. What would you call it?
I call it, I don't know. I call it giving the people what they want.
Well, my name for it is Sauce on the Side. What we're talking about is some extra material, probably video, quite possibly live streams, live streaming video.
Oh my God.
We will be doing some short live streams where you, our listeners, who will then be our viewers, I hope, can ask us questions or tell us stuff in real time, and we can react and respond, and we can talk about really current stuff because it will be live.
That's right.
So we're pretty excited about that.
All right, guys, let's get to it.
Leadership during the coronavirus COVID-19 crisis. Where is it?
I am looking for it. One of the things that's interesting is that Governor Cuomo and Governor Newsom, who both are complicated figures, as all politicians are, because politicians are all just fucking megalomaniacs right. with massive issues. But they are rising to what we would consider to be good leadership. And I think it's interesting to take a moment of like, well, what do we mean by that? Like, is it just like daddy's telling me what to do? Like, what is it about them in this moment that makes us go, oh, thank you fucking God?
Great question. So with Cuomo, it's really interesting because I don't care for the man.
No,
I didn't vote for him. But there's something about him, and I'm not talking in a really wonkish or policy oriented way, but more in his just general manner.
Mm.
It has kind of been like he's everybody's dad. He's like kind of like no, I don't have time for your bullshit. And this is what we have to do. He's been sort of decisive and not diplomatic. I don't know. And there's something very refreshing and comforting about it.
Yeah. And I think it's the same with Newsom. Like, I am also not a fan of Newsom. Mm. He's a total ego monster. We watched him as the mayor of San Francisco, like his whole sucking the ass of the wealthy, his weird cocaine alcohol days.
He looks like he stepped out of central casting. Like, he is the guy you cast as the shady politician. He just like looks that part so much to me.
He looks like American Psycho.
Yeah.
Like,
he just looks like a bad guy.
He is like, uses too much gel in his hair. Like, mm-hmm. He used to date that woman who's now dating Don Jr. He was married to her. Anyway, he's difficult. He's an alcoholic. It was a problem. He's a problem. But what's so relieving about him is not so much that it's about him being dad. It's that he's like, this is the issue. This is the problem. He's being honest about what the dangers are.
Yeah.
And he's just setting the rules. And what's interesting is that I think what's interesting about this moment is, what do we consider authoritarian? You know what I mean?
Yeah, uh-huh. Very much.
Like,
very much.
There's a way that with Newsom being like, shelter in place and school is canceled and this is the shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like such a relief because we're in this moment of panic and crisis. And this is when the Republicans are like, I'm going to go to Red Robin if I want to.
Uh-huh.
And then you have the way that Trump's authoritarianism usually is so grating, but there's something very fact-based and science-based. It's interesting in terms of the performance of the laying down of the rules.
I agree. I think that as authoritarian as Trump is, he doesn't perform it that way.
Well, he doesn't perform the, like, trust me, These rules will help us all. We are taking care of business.
He does the fake version of that. He does the used car dealer version of that. Like, trust me, I got this. I'm the richest guy in the world. I got the best people. I got the best words. I got the biggest brain. I'm a bigly genius, whatever the fuck he said about himself. You know what I mean? He bullshits in a way that some people perceive as that kind of decisive strength.
Right.
But that a lot of people, I would hope most people, see through. And it's really striking to see the contrast between that and leaders who are actually like, okay, this is a tough situation. There are no good calls. I am making a call.
Yeah.
And yes. Even though they may both be kind of authoritarian and both have their problems, it's like refreshing to see the real thing as opposed to the bullshit version.
So what we're saying is... I'm sorry. It's like, I mean, I know I've brought this one up before in Fassbinder's section of this New Wave German movie. It was like an omnibus film in the 70s called Germany in Autumn, I think. His section is like him dealing with all of his affairs and whatever, cutting back and forth between this conversation with his mom, who is a young person during the Third Reich. And him arguing with her about politics and about like, what's it called? Like the German terrorist from the 70s?
I don't
know. Bader Meinhof. He's like arguing with her about Bader Meinhof and they're sitting there like fighting. And he finally gets her to admit that her ideal government is an authoritarian government. And then she's like, no, but an authoritarian who's nice and gentle and cares about his people. It's like she lived through Hitler and he gets her to admit that that's her ideal form of government. So it's like a dictator, but a benevolent dictator. It's like,
a good
it's
one.
Brilliant. A good dictator.
But deep down, maybe we all kind of feel that way to some extent.
Right, because deep down it's nice to have somebody, you know, tell you what the rules are.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of the honesty that we're admiring from Cuomo and Newsom, we have to bring up the sort of breakout star of this moment, Dr. Anthony Fauci.
Oh my God. Oh my God. It's like the agony. It's like the agony of Michelangelo. It's like the agony of Anthony Fauci, this real scientist who was like doing AIDS research like back in the fucking day, like NIH doctor up there suffering through listening to this fucking idiot. Oh my God, the torment of this man. It's like,
oh. Yeah, so he sort of jumped onto the national scene a while back when the Congress was having some hearings about COVID-19, and he testified. And he was just totally forthright and candid about the whole situation. He provided really good information. He was asked, is it going to get worse? And he was like, uh-huh, it is going to get much worse. And, you know, he didn't spare anyone. He didn't try to soften it, but he was honest and science-based, and it was clear he knew his shit. And everyone was so excited because it's like, wow, that exists. That's a thing. Somebody who knows about things that are true, that not only that, but the science things that are true.
And it's his job. He's the director of the NIH Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. It's his fucking job.
Exactly. He is like the head expert of infectious diseases in America. That is his job.
And has been since Ronald fucking Reagan.
So he not only knows his shit, but he's clearly not partisan, at least insofar as it would influence one's reaction to a pandemic, which we're going to talk about in a moment. Yeah, it's been a trip to watch him watch Trump, to watch him react and try to be professional and respectful, but also have to step in and correct Trump's misstatements, as they're sometimes called. Yeah. Okay, so we should talk about the partisan aspect of this. I want to talk about the weird way that GOP politicians, the media apparatus, and people in general have responded to this.
Right.
I'm thinking specifically of comments by For example, Republican Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin.
Oh, God.
That rhymes. Ron Johnson of Wisconsin.
Ron Johnson. That's why he won.
Probably is. He's the one who, several days ago, told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that, I'll just quote it. "I'm not denying what a nasty disease COVID-19 can be and how it's obviously devastating to somewhere between 1 and 3.4% of the population. But that means 97 to 99% will get through this and develop immunities and will be able to move beyond this. We don't shut down our economy because tens of thousands of people die on the highways. It's a risk we accept so we can move about. We don't shut down our economies because tens of thousands of people die from the common flu." And he goes on, basically saying, 3.4% of the population is nothing. This is a pittance. I think first, this has been brought up by others, but we should address the senator's math.
Yeah.
Which is 3.4% of the population of the United States would mean 11 million people dying.
Million people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. Can I just add something that they're starting now to say, grandparents are willing to die to not have the economy stop.
Shut up. Who said
yes,
that?
Yes, they
Nobody
are.
Said that.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. I swear to God. I swear to God.
That's pretty bad.
Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick says that grandparents would be willing to die to save the economy for their grandchildren. Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know what? I'll let them speak. I'll let the boomers speak for themselves. yeah, I won't put words in their mouth, but that's a new take. I feel like we've seen this sort of evolve from, like, it's not a thing, it's a Democratic hoax to try to make the president look bad. It's no worse than the flu, which my dad keeps reiterating. My dad, who's a doctor.
He's a doctor.
Oh. He's a physician. And we'll have these conversations where he'll say, oh, but 60,000 people died of the flu in the 2017-18 season. And I'll say, Irv, do you think Italy doesn't have the flu? Like, they have the flu. Why is it so messed up in their country right now? Why can't they handle this? And he'll sort of acknowledge that. And then I'll push and he'll acknowledge. And then the end of the conversation, he'll just go right back to the beginning and be like, well, anyway, nobody says anything about the flu. I don't know why they're making such a big deal about this. Yeah, I know. You just got to breathe. You just have to breathe and say, just wash your hands, Dad.
I will say my dad, my Fox News dad, is being very good about staying the fuck home and washing his hands and treating it like it's a real thing.
Well,
which it
good.
Is.
Well, I'm glad to hear. Was he treating it like that from the start?
Yeah.
That's good.
And I'm also going to say it's because they watch Israeli TV, and that always kind of operates as a check. Because in Israel has its shit, and I'm not even going to get into that. But the one thing that Israel doesn't have is the kind of 50 years of anti-science bias.
That's a very American thing.
It's very American. So even religious Jews and the fundamentalists and the people who are fucking up the country and all that stuff, they still believe in science.
So you're lucky that your dad has that check. Because what we're finding is that the attitudes that people hold about coronavirus and the behaviors that they choose based on those attitudes are really, like, polarized, are really different depending on partisanship, depending on their political party, which is bizarre. I mean, I know everything is partisan. It's like hackneyed to say so. But this is just a matter of simple, straightforward science. Like, the science you learn in second grade, like, there's germs that can make you sick. You wash your hands so you don't get the germs on you. It's pretty fundamental stuff. It's pretty basic. It's not really a matter for disagreement.
So, but that's what I find so interesting is they want to treat this virus like it's a sentient human that can be argued with. And I feel like that's so bizarre about it. Like at some point, Laura Ingraham was like, we have to know when we're getting back to work. This uncertainty is real. And it's like,
we need we need a date to know when this is going to be over.
You know what? I'm going to go talk to the virus about that. I'm going to get a date from the virus. Okay.
And I saw a Republican politician, and I wish I could remember who it was, tweeting a couple weeks ago, I'm going out to dinner with my family because Americans don't live in fear. Like, you don't have to live in fear. You just have to not go out to dinner. It's just a practical matter of social distancing. It's not about fear or not fear. The virus is not trying to inspire fear in you. It's not trying to change your lifestyle. You're not giving in to the virus by changing your lifestyle. Oh. You're just protecting yourself in the only way, literally the only way you can.
But that's the same with the foreign thing, right?
Yes. The foreign thing. That's a whole trope they have on the right, too. Calling it the Wuhan virus, the Chinese coronavirus, or the China virus. Trump, in his Oval Office address to the United States, which was supposed to reassure everyone and help us understand that real leadership was happening and everything was under control, insisted on calling it the foreign coronavirus. Mm-hmm. And works in, whenever he can, references to that, references to how he stopped flights coming in from China and how important that was and how many lives he saved doing that, which is nonsensical. If not treating the virus like it's a person with some kind of consciousness and intention, it's definitely treating it like something you can catch only from China.
Yeah.
They seem to persist in believing that it's like something we get from China. It's like that ship has sailed. The question of where it originated and how and what the Chinese did or didn't tell everyone about it and what we did or didn't do to try to stop it from coming from China, none of that matters now. It's such a simple second grade fucking thing. It's a kindergarten thing.
Yeah.
And you catch something from somebody else who has it. Once it's in there, it spreads.
But that's the thing, is this treating it like it's a sentient human that can be reasoned with and negotiated with. Negotiated with. It's amazing. There's also, like, let's just get to some, just a quick visit on ghoulish, rank, disgusting behavior. Okay. In two forms. One of which is people like Mike Pence and Rand Paul saying, this isn't real, this isn't real, and if you don't have symptoms, don't worry about it. But then, even though they're asymptomatic, getting tested.
Yes, and I would like to add to that, that Rand Paul, after he got tested, but before he got his results, was swimming in the Senate swimming pool and having lunch with his colleagues, even though he knew he might have been exposed and he had been tested. He didn't quarantine himself until after he got the positive result.
Oh, motherfucker! And then,
yeah,
in terms of the really ghoulish, cartoonish corruption, I mean, really straight out of like a movie, is fucking Senator Richard Burr, the head of Senate Intelligence, dumping $1.5 million in stock after being in on top secret briefings while also saying that everything is fine.
Didn't he write an op-ed saying that everything was going to be fine, the coronavirus wasn't as bad as people are saying, even though he had had those briefings, knew that wasn't true, and had dumped his stock? This situation is so flagrantly horrible. It had me agreeing with Tucker Carlson.
Oh, my God.
I flipped to Fox News the other night just out of curiosity because I wanted to see how they're covering it at this point. It was Tucker Carlson, and he was laying into Richard Burr. And I was like, huh, okay.
Well, look, can I read a tweet from, this is something I never would have said, can I read a tweet from Matt Gaetz?
Here's something I don't normally say. Sure. Yeah. Read a tweet from Matt Gaetz.
He said, at Katie Hill for California gets run out of Congress for screwing a campaign staffer absent any complaint. Senator Burr stays as intelligence chairman after screwing all Americans by falsely reassuring us with op-eds on COVID while he dumped his stock portfolio early. This is not fair. Whoa. This
is wild to me.
Whoa.
Suddenly, there are norms and standards and ethics. Suddenly, they exist again. How did that happen? These people can't just pick and choose when they're going to hold people to standards and when they're not. Like, normally, they pick and choose based on whether it's a Democrat or Republican. They're holding a fellow Republican to standards? Like, what the fuck is up with that?
Honestly, it's shocking. Like, Tom Tillis is setting his, he's the other senator from North Carolina. He said, oh, this doesn't look good because he's up for re-election. So there's still some self-interest there.
Of course there is.
Matt Gaetz is a fucking Trumper. He's a Trumper's Trumper. Yeah. And he's like a Trump ass sucker. And he's saying that, it's like, up is down. I don't know what's going on.
Maybe Trump doesn't like Burr. Maybe he has something against him and he just like gave the signal that everyone should shit on him or something.
Maybe.
That's pretty cynical, but that's what I think.
So there's the ghoulish corruption, which is just the excessive self-enrichment where you can't even believe
it. It's so blatant. Yeah.
Kelly Loeffler, the senator from Georgia, selling just millions of dollars in stock, literally leaving their briefing meetings, tweeting out that Trump is in control and this isn't something to worry about, and selling their stocks. It's like, it's beyond. And then you just have the minimizing of it. You have John Cornyn tweeting out a photo of Corona beer. And you're like, okay, seriously, dude? Like, really? Is this really what we're doing?
That's so fucking inappropriate. Yeah. What is up with that minimizing thing? Why? I think it's something in like the Republican ethos. Caring about something. And it goes to that trolling part of the Republican ethos that we've talked about in previous episodes. The troll is not allowed to care about anything, right?
Yes.
If you show that you don't care, then you always win because the other person cares about something. And I think Republicans, in a lot of ways, in the sort of culture of the Republican discourse, have taken that up. And owning the libs becomes the important thing. Liberals care about coronavirus. They're worried. They're scared. So we have to laugh at that. You have to own the libs. Like,
yes.
Spreading a virus that kills people to own the libs.
Yes. And I feel like that's what it comes back to, is like treating this virus as a sentient being and trying to own the virus. It's like all of it is down to this thing where they are so stuck in this mode of politicizing that there's no way to come together in crisis. And I feel like that's what leadership is supposed to be about.
Oh, God. Wouldn't that be nice? So finally, we have to talk about the elephant in the room, the grotesque in the room, Donald Trump and his whole fucking journey of responses to this crisis. As we all know, he started off with this denialism, claiming that it was a Democrat hoax, basically not doing much to prepare for the inevitability that the virus would spread. And we saw, you pointed this out, the Washington Post did a comparison of Fox News a week ago, you know, and Fox News more recently. And the way that they rallied to back up Trump's denialism.
Yeah. Yeah. Just go watch it. We'll send the link to you. I mean, that's the thing. Like, it's like we don't have anything to add to it other than watching the way that they are not reporting news, that they're doing their performance. It's so bad. And it's not just a lib who can be owned and disagreed with. It's a virus. It's a mindless virus that is just trying to replicate itself in humans. That's all it's doing. And all of a sudden, they're faced with science and real world. And you see them 3 days later saying the opposite thing as they were saying 3 days before at the cost of human lives. And it just seemed like there's anybody at the wheel going, you know, it's not like, oh, if we say this different thing, it's going to be. It's like people are going to die. Like,
yeah,
thousands of people are going to die if we report this wrong, if we get this story wrong.
It's like their attention, their focus is not on that at all. The idea of,
of it
as a life and death situation, and they have this responsibility to get it right. It really feels like they see their responsibility as being to defend Trump.
Yep.
To make the left look bad.
Yep.
And so they just fell right into that framework, which Trump supplied them. I think in this case, it's, you know, sometimes the tail wagging the dog between Trump and Fox News, right? They go back and forth. He right. says things and they turn it into talking points.
That's right.
Talking points. He picks them up. In this case, I think it sort of came from him and they just went with it and were like, if dear leader is going to say it's nothing, we're going to say it's nothing. What has been fascinating to me has been watching Trump sort of
flail
through this. Yes, in real time. Because what I realized is he has quite successfully bluffed his way through everything his entire fucking life.
Yeah.
He bluffed his way into prominence as a so-called real estate mogul when he never really was. He bluffed America into thinking he was this multi-billionaire whatever, and he never was. Everything's been a bluff. He bluffed his way into the White House.
Yep.
He bluffed his way through the Mueller investigation. He bluffed his way through the impeachment trial. He says whatever he wants. He lies. If the lie doesn't work, he tries another lie that contradicts the first one, and it doesn't matter. It's never mattered. He's always just been able to say whatever he feels like, and his money, his perceived money, his power, his charisma, whatever it is, always gets him through. And what I think we're really seeing is a situation he cannot bluff his way out of, and he doesn't know what else to do. He tried for the first month or two to bluff, and then he couldn't anymore.
And I feel like there is this way where you were like, if this is a novel, if this horror that we're living through is a fiction, because it does, it feels like
a fiction.
It feels like if Martin Amis wrote this, we'd be like, A little too much, buddy.
It's a bit on the nose. Yeah.
A little on the nose, dude. And I feel like if we're looking narratively, it's like we're leading up to this moment where you're not even in the subtleties of little political dynamics. There's no subtlety to this. Zero. It is like completely exposed, and he's finally faced with something as mindless and relentless as he is. And he's losing. It feels like a novel.
He doesn't perceive that, I think. He doesn't perceive the mindlessness and relentlessness of the virus. He, I think, honestly thinks it's something you catch from China, and he still doesn't quite get it. I'm sure that he does not understand exponential functions. Not all of us made it to algebra 2 trig, but like, there's no way that he passed algebra 2 trig in high school, right? Like, he just got his C because he was somebody rich. So
100%.
I don't think that it's the virus itself. I think he really doesn't understand what's going on. And I honestly don't think that the number of cases of coronavirus infection, the number of deaths, the impact on hospitals, I don't think any of that would have ever gotten through to him or made him realize that he can't bullshit his way out of this. I think there's only one thing that could get through to him, the stock market.
Mm.
We've had a 30% drop in the last couple weeks that was faster than any other 30% drop in the history of the stock market.
Right.
We lost that amount of value quicker than any of the three crashes of the Great Depression.
Right. And we're looking that we're about to go to 30% unemployment, which is higher than unemployment at the peak of the Great Depression.
Yeah. I don't think Trump understands economics very well at all.
Mm-mm.
But he knows that the Dow goes up and down. Like, he knows that basic thing. He's been touting the Dow his whole presence. He tweets about it all the fucking time. There was one day where after several days of crashing, the market recovered. Like, it had gone down 10% in one day, and then it came back up. Like 9%, like came back up, not all the way. And he sent out to all of his supporters a picture of the graph signed by him, which is just so revealing because that's where his focus is.
Oh my God.
He was taking credit for it. And of course, subsequent to that, it just crashed more and more and more. And it's going to keep going down. So this is something that gives me a little bit of comfort in these dark times. Not that the that the stock market's crashing, which sucks. I mean, it's good if you buy low and you're savvy about it, but it's a bummer for people who are depending on their investments for income, like people who are retirees. It fucking sucks. Yeah. It sucks for a lot of people, and it's a signifier of a lot of economic problems that are going to really fuck up people's lives and already have started to. So it sucks. But there's a sliver of comfort in thinking about how humiliated he must feel, because that was his big fucking thing. His whole reelection was going to rest on it, the economy, jobs, and the stock market.
But actually, what's really interesting about that, and this is where it feels like this novel, because the stock market still gets to be managed and controlled by the wealthiest, right?
Yes.
And so he can say the economy is good because the stock market's up, even when working people's lives haven't meaningfully changed. But with this, it's like, oh no, you don't even get that, dude.
He doesn't even get that.
No.
And it's not even just that it's not doing well. Like, it's doing historically horribly.
Yeah.
All the gains of his presidency have been completely wiped out. It's bad, and it gives me amusement. I really like looking at the numbers every day and seeing how far the Dow has dropped, and just knowing that everything he does, he got the Fed to do tons of quantitative easing. They're pumping money to banks. They're lending money to businesses. They're doing everything they can. He got a couple of bills passed. He's ready to send checks to every American. He'll turn into the, like, Keynesian socialist.
Absolutely.
Demand side. He'll do whatever it takes. But everything he does doesn't help.
Everything he does turns to shit.
Yeah. Including being president of the United States. Like, why did anyone think that the person behind Trump Airlines
would turn out
any different as the fucking leader of the United States? Anyway, it's been fascinating to watch him grapple with that he cannot deny the numbers of the stock market. That is a concrete, absolute badge of his failure. And yet he can't do anything about it. But he doesn't know how to do anything except bullshit. So you see him in those insane press conferences every day, kind of trying to bullshit his way through it. Talking about, we're going to have a cure. And then Anthony Fauci has to step up and be like, no, this is not the case.
Okay, but then here's the thing. Mm-hmm. And this is something that we've talked about before. And this is something that I think we're sort of saying with this whole, like, treating the virus like a sentient thing that can be owned.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Is you're seeing Republicans, and that's why I think it's very interesting that, like, in our group of governors who are being daddy, you know, like, ooh, daddy, tell me to shelter in place.
Lock me up, daddy.
Governor Mike DeWine is totally being like that. He's, like, not part of the death cult, right?
Yeah.
And it's because he knows it is not in his political best self-interest to let his constituents fucking die like dogs. And I feel like that's what's so interesting about this moment. Like, we've seen this throughout, and we talked about this before in our episodes about the sort of right wing owning the libs. At a certain point, it is not going to be in their best interest to do this, but they're still doing it and they cannot stop. Right. And that's where you kind of wonder about it. It is not in their interest. What are they doing?
Yeah, and that's why I'm curious to see what continues to happen here. You know, I want more than anything for this to pass without too much harm coming. You know, I know it's going to get worse, but more than anything, I want it to not get as bad as it could.
Right.
And I'm hoping for that. I'm hoping people will continue to stay at home and, you know, we can flatten the curve and get through this. But it is really interesting to see as things do worsen and become undeniable on whatever level, whether it's the economy or voter fears or actual numbers of infected and dead.
Right.
This is undeniable. It is the out of nowhere, no one individual person is responsible for it. You can't call it partisan.
You can't bomb it.
Yeah, you can't bomb it and you can't bullshit it.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. No matter how much you bullshit. And my hope is that a lot of Republicans who've backed up Trump, yeah, they are thinking about their political self-interest. That's why they backed Trump in the first place. But Trump doesn't even have political skills. He lacks that. He only has con man skills. And there comes a point where you can't con anymore.
And that was the thing with Steve Bannon. It's like people wanted to be like, oh, Steve Bannon's this genius. Steve Bannon supported a candidate for Alabama governor special election who lost to a Democrat.
Yeah.
They are not playing multi-level chess, my friends.
They're not. He's definitely not. They're definitely not. Maybe this is the moment where everyone shows up at the island and sees that all there are FEMA tents and piss-soaked mattresses and no bands there. I'm referring to Firefest.
Yeah, everyone's not getting a reference.
Eventually, it's all going to come crashing down. Maybe this is that moment.
Well, Rebecca, we still have so many things to talk about, and we will. And we might even find some other sexy ways to do that for our listeners.
Sexy in more the abstract sense.
Yes.
don't expect literal sexiness. No, we're always sexy. But for real, there's a bunch of stuff we wanted to get to, but maybe we'll save it for some of our sauce on the side extras that are coming your way.
That's right. That's right.
And you will find those on our Patreon. We're going to host our live videos on patreon.com/saucepodcast. You don't have to be a patron to watch.
At least not for now.
Yeah. No,
we give the first ones to you free.
Exactly. But if you do choose to join, there are many awesome bonuses, which you can check out on the site. For example, there's a Discord community where we can chat about stuff. And there is bonus material now and then that only patrons have access to. So patreon.com/saucepodcast. You can also email us. We are saucepodcast@gmail.com. And we are @saucepodcast on the various social medias.
And you can find me at Maya Garantz anywhere you are looking for Maya Garantzes.
And you can find me, Rebecca Cohen, as @GynoStar on all the various platforms.
We really hope you are all sheltering in place, because even when this comes out a week from now, you should still fucking be sheltering in place.
Just keep, whatever happens, just keep sheltering in place. Just
if
for
you
a
can,
while.
If you can, just and if wash you the fuck out of your hands. You know,
wash
the,
your
the
hair.
Virus isn't something you can argue with, guys. It's just not.
So be right. Safe. And we want to hear from you about how you are spending your quarantine, how you are keeping yourself sane, and anything else you'd like us to ruin in future episodes or short video live broadcasts.
That's right. All right, guys.
Adios, amoebas.